It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Welcome on into Inside Black and Gold. Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak coming to you and riding high off a victory because we don't know the next time we'll get one, but we're going to sure enjoy this one.
Special edition. This is a special edition of the Inside Black and Gold podcast. We're going to go in through. This is going to be a fully mailbag edition. We got a lot of comments on our last live stream, so we're going to break it all down. Saints won a game. The Saints are 3-7. The Saints have a long way to go before people start taking them seriously, but all you can do is win one game at a time. And next game up is a Jameis Winston-led Browns team. And Kevin Stefanski confirmed today that Jameis Winston will be the quarterback. Now, will Jameis have the same level of juice? This is my question. This is not a mailbag question, but I'm curious what you think. Do you think Jameis will have the same level of juice for a revenge game now that Dennis Allen is gone? Because I don't think he will.
No, I'm with you right there. It doesn't have that same luster to it without DA around to kind of rub it into. And he might actually be going, oh, shit, it's against Riz.
Yeah, I mean, well, I genuinely don't know if he has a good relationship with Riz or not. It seems like everyone does.
Exactly, right.
But like, if I was Jameis and I had that game circled on my calendar, it wasn't because, man, I want to get back at Alvin. Man, I want to stick it to this guy. I want to stick it to this guy. It was, I want to make Dennis Allen cry. I want to get this guy fired.
Right. He's like, damn, I wish I could have been that Carolina game.
Yeah. Right. And Andy didn't get the chance either. Anyway, it's just kind of funny to me. And like Derek kind of said this when he talked to the media after the game. He was just like, what do we have to lose? They already fired the coach.
That's awesome, right?
And he's right. Like, what's the punishment for being bad now? There is none. Like, just go play football. Have fun. Like, have a good time. Like care.
That was key too. You felt the fun, and obviously winning does that.
No question. You know, one thing that has been going on in the comments that I am just now, I saw someone say Christmas came early for Jeff. And I was like, what the hell is he talking about? Am I talking about? They're saying that Will says, Jeff, with the early Christmas spirit. And I was like, what does this mean? And then I figured out that there's this whole conversation that I have like a really luxurious beard right now. And, you know, I did tell you, Steve, that a couple weeks ago I said, I'm going to grow a Duck Dynasty beard until someone tells me that I look unprofessional. And it's going well. You see, it's really, yeah, it's coming in.
You got the special beard oil and stuff to maintain it?
No, I'm all natural, baby.
Okay.
But yeah, I do have to like, it's hard to like get it to grow as if it's like a beard and not just, you start to look homeless after a while. Like that's the commitment.
Right.
Like I still have to go to work. And Dan, our boss, Dan, the market manager, did mention it, but he mentioned it in a positive way. I've only gotten positive feedback, so apparently I should have been doing this earlier.
Yeah, anyway, I had like one time for like, I was like, I'm going to do No Shave November. And like for Thanksgiving, we took the family picture and was like, oh, look, there's two nice people with a serial killer.
Yeah. Well, my goal was like, hey, it's going to get cold eventually. So might as well just, that's not happening.
No, well, you'll need it in Green Bay.
Yes, yeah, true. That's kind of the idea. Is like once I have to deal with cold, it'll be nice. But you know, I also wore a jacket on the sideline at the dome yesterday for the first time, and now I have to wear it every week because, you know, kind of like Colin Saunders grew a mustache. You know, you're not allowed to shave the mustache after a win, as long as you keep winning. That's your look. So I've got to wear a jacket on. I got to be dapper as hell on the sideline. But anyway, this is not what this is about. This is a podcast about the Saints, not my manscaping. So Michael Morgan, who's been he's still some negativity out there, and then that's fair. They're 3-7. They shouldn't be all positivity. But Mike's having a hard time dealing with this. He says, "I think it was just the element of surprise, still an aging roster and lack of talent." What surprise are you referring to in this game against the Saints and Falcons, a game where these two teams know each other better than anyone? That they played hard? I don't think the Falcons were surprised by anything the Saints did. They were probably surprised that the Saints played well.
To me, the surprise was, wow, Scantling still got wheels like that, and Derek had two dimes in that game that literally was mouth open, like, I can't believe he completed that.
Yeah, I guess you could say the surprise was MVS and the fact that receivers did anything in that game, and because they really haven't. Like, you watch the Panthers game, like, where are the receivers in that game? MVS had one catch in that game for like 2 yards. But no, I think probably the surprise, I don't know if it was a surprise, because even Kirk Cousins was talking about this going into the game. He was like, he understands, hey, when you have an interim coach, like, a lot of times you'll get that energy boost and you got to match that. And that's why you'll see a lot of teams get that quick. And I don't even necessarily disagree with Mike here. I think it's going to be hard for the Saints to sustain the level of energy they played with this week. And it's going to eventually come down to, like, hey, are you good enough? And you're going to have games against the Rams. You're going to have games against the Packers. You're going to have games against Commanders. A lot of three good teams. And, you know, those are going to be tough games to beat. And you won't have the luxury of saying, oh, it's our energy boost from the interim. And we got a rivalry game here. And Cam's going to show up.
My other surprise is apparently I'm the only one that thinks that Taysom Hill needs double digit touches, but I don't know.
No, you're not. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, because he didn't get him in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he needs to get more touches. Now, the Browns is a different matchup, like, especially like against the Falcons. Like, does he need double digit touches every week? I don't know.
No.
Does he need double digit touches against the Falcons?
Yes.
Every time? Yes. 1,000 times? Yes. And I'll give Clint Kubiak a pass, because it's his first year, right? Like, he's kind of learning this in terms of how to use Taysom in the best way possible. And he's had to coach several games without Taysom. He's had to game plan without Taysom for a lot of this season. So, you know, I think this was just an example of, you know, and this would happen to Pete Carmichael, and we would complain about it every time then too. Like, sometimes you outthink yourself, and you get into the third quarter, and you're like, wow, we haven't gotten him a touch in a while. When are we going to do it? You got to force feed it a little bit more than he did in that game. But either way,
that's where I definitely feel like a fan when it comes to Taysom. For whatever reason, I never feel like he touches the ball enough.
No. There's never enough. Rich Vitale says, does anybody have an ETA for Eric McCoy? ETA is tough because it's going to be it's not like there's a date where they're like, he's definitely back by this point. That said, in talking to him in the locker room this week, it sounded like he felt positive about playing this week. Now, it's going to come down to the doctor. It's going to come down to whether he's ready. I would expect to be added to the active roster one way or the other, and you'll kind of see where that goes. But we'll have to wait and see. I think he's hoping to play this week against the Browns. If I had to guess in terms of the medical staff.
After the bye?
Yeah, I think if you're the medical team and you're a little sketchy about, is he ready? You have the bye coming up, and he's definitely going to be ready in week 13. But is he going to be ready in week 11? So you're going to have that. That's going to be something they determine probably throughout the week. I think if I'm doing it, I want to play him in week 11, because my question is not necessarily how is he going to play. It's how is he going to recover? And assuming he goes out there and you don't feel like, okay, the risk of re-injury is there, which it shouldn't be. He had surgery to correct it. I'd put him out there this week. I think there's a decent chance he's back this week.
Yeah, and I mean, at least the center position, obviously you have a big benefit having him back. It hasn't been a huge issue without him.
Oh, it's been an issue. I mean, you've survived without him.
Right.
But you got very, very much worse on the offensive line when he went out. Like, this, the offensive line was, dare I say, a strength over the first 2 weeks of this season. Like, you shut down Micah Parsons and Tank Lawrence, like, without issue, right? Like, the Panthers weren't able to generate any pass rush in week one. And then Eric McCoy goes down, and suddenly the entire group, like, there are certain players that you lose on your roster that not only does losing them impact you negatively in the sense that you are not as good for not having this player on the field. Like Chris Olave, for example, like you lose Chris Olave and suddenly your receiver core is not as good, but the other players in that receiver room are not worse for them not being there.
Right.
A guy like Eric McCoy, and I would say the same for a guy like Derek Carr, you lose the ability to improve the players around you as well as losing the top end talent that you have at center. The guards next to him are not playing as well as they would if he was there. The protection communication, the protection plans, the checks you make are not as high level as they would be if he was there. And so I think that getting him back is a major, like, I think people underestimate just how much that hamstrung this offense. And obviously it's a tough analogy because tough word to use because he had a groin injury, but you get the idea, like how much that impacted this offense, not having him out there and what they were able to do, particularly in the run game. So we'll see. I think they will be much improved as an offensive line group when he gets back.
I just figured it to me. It's like there wasn't a reason, at least I felt, the team was losing.
No, but it wasn't the team. But again, it's like,
sure.
Like, I don't want to sit here and trash Connor McGovern. I think Connor, for the situation he was thrown into, has played really well. I wasn't a fan of Lucas Patrick at center. I didn't think he played well at left guard. I don't think he's played particularly well at center. And Shane Lemieux, he's back now. I thought the one game you asked him to play center, he was serviceable. But it's gone from a position that's like a strength of yours as your center to a position where it's like, if we can get replacement level play, that's a win. So we'll see. But either way, I expect him to come back, and I expect that to be a big boost for this offensive line group when he does. Gen X girl says, glad the Saints won, but agree they still have tons of problems. I can't disagree with that. Like, yes, their problems didn't go away. That said, their problems were not significant to the point that they are 2 to 3 to 4 to win football team, right? And the game they won yesterday is how they should have been able to win several other games. So, like, that's the difference to me.
We shall see. I'm just, obviously, things would have been a lot different if Koo didn't get that voodoo doll we had on Koo didn't work.
That's true. But I think he just used up all of his juice in that, with that 58-yarder, because he hasn't been particularly good since he's missed several games since that point. 992 RAS says ATL got double rizzled yesterday. Rizzed. They got rizzed. Not rizzlered, not twizzlered, not rizzed. Rizzed.
Nobody beats the Riz.
Will Hildebrand says, I got the new coach bump and the positive of DA being gone, so I felt like plus 3.5 was stealing, but they didn't cover. Oh, no, they did. They were underdogs in that game.
Right.
Yeah, it felt like that should have been closer to an even line, but it's like, again, it's always, where's the money, you know? And it's just, there's not going to be a ton of money flooding in on the Saints, even with the interim coach bump, when you've lost 7 consecutive games.
They should know the NFC South better, though. Any division game for, you know what I mean?
That's true. 992 RAS says, Turner, Young, and Cam all look good. You know, again, I thought they did it in moments. They did it in big spots. I don't think it was a great game by the defensive line in general. Like, you got run the F on all day. But that's the thing when you're, it bothers me when you talk about pass rushers, because like a lot of times it does come down to like 2 or 3 plays and you're on the field for 60 snaps. You won 3 of those snaps. You had a good game. You don't win those 3 snaps. You had a bad game, but that's the difference, because we don't look at the run fits. We don't look at whenever they have to set the edge. We just look at the sacks. But I think Peyton Turner, like, I've been trying not to talk about him too much because I don't want to jinx the guy. But my big thing for Peyton this season was stay healthy, please. Find a way to get through a season. You'll get your opportunities. You'll get on the field. I just need you to be there when your chance is there. And to this point, he has. And he's made several impact plays throughout the course of the year. Like, tell me the impact plays you saw from the Saints, like, second and third string defensive ends last year.
Can't really think of any, right?
I don't think it happened. So having that kind of third string guy he's a first round pick, you know, and you might say it was a bad pick, but it's still like the talent level is there. And every now and then you'll see him make a play and be like, oh, that's right. Now there was a reason that he was a high draft pick, even if maybe they reached for him.
Nice to see him have the energy and even obviously some kind of closer relationship, you would think, with a guy like Rizzi, just because he was coming up behind to bear hug him. He didn't mean to make him numb.
Oh, he wasn't trying to bear hug him. He was shoving him in the back.
Oh, I thought he gave him the big bear hug.
No. He just shoved him.
So he's pulling a Mike Evans on Marshawn move.
But it was a loving shove.
I gotcha.
It was not like, I'm mad at you, shove. And they were hugging in the locker room. Like they it wasn't an angry thing. He probably felt terrible. He was like, I think I just hurt the guy.
Yeah.
And you do got to be careful when you're 6'4", 280, and you're shoving a, you know, Riz can't be more than 6 foot, 220. But if Peyton shoved me in the back,
I'd go on IR.
Yeah. I mean, I'm already injured. I got a neck thing. I got a knee thing. I will tell you, I actually re-aggravated my knee injury. You want to know how?
No.
It was the Alvin play, the one he dropped the ball. Like, yeah. And I try not to be overly dramatic on the sideline because that's not my place. I try not to like scream and yell and do whatever. But I get into it, right? I get excited. And so I'm like, oh my God, it's going to 50-yard touchdown to ice the game. And then he dropped it. And I swear it was involuntary. Fell to my knees. Like, I was just so overwhelmed with emotion in that moment that I just dropped to my knees. And like, I didn't mean to. I was not trying to be dramatic. And so I got up, like, super fast. Like, oh, shit, I can't do this. Like, I'm not allowed to do that. but it was just, like, that was my human reaction in that moment, was to fall to my knees.
Oh, man.
I need to go look at, like, the L-22 and maybe see if I could find it somewhere. But And doing that like messed up my knee. Like my knee was actually feeling pretty good throughout the course of the game. Then I did that, and it's been aching ever since. So,
did Tyler look at you like, "What are you doing?"
I don't know. I didn't ask him. I tried to play it off like I didn't do anything, because like I'm not supposed to be doing that. That's not how you're supposed to act on the sideline. I genuinely, it was not like something I planned to do.
Right. It just happened.
Just happened. But yeah, I did re-aggravate my knee injury doing that. But I mean, like it was like, when stuff like that happens and you're on the field, you're just like, how? Because it all looks more real when you're on the field, you know? God. Michael Morgan, this is what I say. He's been negative. They gave up 190 rushing yards. That's not a good game from the D-line. But when your team is mediocre, we'll take it. No, I mean, I agree with that. Like, there were negatives in this game. But I can't. Someone posted the comment, and I want to find it. Oh, Will Hildebrand. He says, they were outgained in yards, had less first downs, and possessed the ball more than 10 minutes less. DA coach teams never won games with that type of data. And that's, again, when we talked about this, like that's the difference, right?
Find
like
the way to win, right?
Finding ways to win instead of finding ways to lose. Like how many games have we looked at where the Saints led? I mean, look at the Panthers game. Saints led in time of possession. They led in yardage. They led in every meaningful statistic except for 23-22. And they lost the game, you know? Like the Saints were a more talented team than the Panthers, but they didn't play like it in big moments. And so I agree with that. I agree with both those takes.
A DA coach team was definitely finding creative ways to lose I've never seen before.
They sure were. Greg Raging Cajun says, I'm pumped, buddy. I'm well pleased with Rizzi.
Let's hope Michael we stay Morgan. Pumped after this Sunday.
Yeah. Pammy Whammy says, I am not ready to see Rizzi's face in the frozen tundra. It's just going to get redder and redder. He's going to go full Coughlin. So that's my kicker, Mr. Group, Mr. Groupinson. Okay, one more thing, and then we can take a break here. Snakebite says, the energy in the dome was incredible. And I agree, it was really cool because you know, you the whole time you're looking around being like, this is a 2-7 football team. And it would be very easy for fans to stay home and for fans to be like, I'm tired.
But the folks
in the building, and I wouldn't say it was a full house. There were some empty seats. I didn't think Falcons fans traveled particularly well.
Right.
Which is embarrassing for them.
Shocking.
Because like that's a game you should travel for. It probably was a pretty cheap ticket. The team coming off a 7-game losing streak. You couldn't travel for that one. But hey, there were some folks who like trying to parade on Bourbon Street. And then it's like, maybe don't. But I thought the crowd was hot. And it's like, it really isn't that tough. No offense. Like, it's not that tough to get the Superdome excited. You just got to give them, like, literally any reason, and they'll get excited. You just got to, like, not feed them trash. Like, you know, like seriously, like, they want to get excited. They want to cheer for you. Just stop playing terribly. And I do think that, You know, like there's still going to be some lingering resentment toward Derek Carr in that. Like, I think, and I know people, there's a lot of people who just don't like Derek Carr for football reasons, and I respect that. But I think even someone who didn't like Derek Carr would appreciate that a reasonably large portion of the hate directed at Derek Carr is a product of him being DA's guy and an extension of DA. And people were fed up with DA. So this dude comes in and they're just like, I already hate him because every time I hear him talk, I think about DA. And so I'm curious if the narrative around him can change at all without DA in the picture. And you're just like, okay, this is just a veteran quarterback who's better than the other options on the team and gives us a chance to win. Because that's how I look at it. Like, do I look at him as a guy who's going to take you to a Super Bowl? No. But I do look at him as the best option right now. And he'll be the best option next year, too.
You give me 270 with two touchdowns, no picks, I'll love you.
Didn't get sacked. And right. It wasn't because he wasn't under pressure.
Like I said, just those two balls, maybe it was because, too, I'm sitting atop the Superdome and just seeing, you know, going down the field just placed perfectly, too. And I saw some crazy – I think you even retweeted that some folks were complaining he threw into triple coverage. But, man, what a throw that was to get to Scantling.
It wasn't really triple coverage. I mean, right. It was there, like in the end, it wasn't. So when I say that, I mean, I wouldn't say it was designed triple coverage, right? AJ Terrell came off Mason Tipton late and ended up in the frame. So you had three guys.
Right. But, so it looks like, they were crowded around him.
He did outrun them.
Right.
and so, I mean, like in the sense that there were three defenders trying to get to him and none were capable. Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't like, oh, he's in triple coverage, I'm going to throw to him now. Like, he beat his guy, and that's when Derek decided to throw it. And by the time the ball got there, there were three guys in the frame, which makes for a great picture. You know? Like, that's why I tweeted the picture, because I was like, this is great. And it's also great that it was their three star defensive backs.
Right. Nah, that was awesome. That to me gave me a little extra boost towards Derek, giving me more of a vote of a confidence in him. Like, oh, you can do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. We know he can do that. We've seen him do that. The question is, does he have a guy that he can do that with? And that's a good example of, like, he hasn't been able to do that with Mason Tipton. It's been frustrating because Mason's a fast guy, but they just never seem to be on the same page from a
whatever
timing it is, right? Perspective, from like where that ball needs to be and the angles and, you know, getting to your red line and knowing your landmarks and being where you're supposed to be. And I think, like, just the you can see the difference between a UDFA kind of learning that and a veteran who you can trust already knows how to do that, right? Already knows how to run those routes in an NFL way. And I think that's the difference between that missing, like, did against the Chiefs, and you hitting on that like you did in this game, because they went for shot plays against the Chiefs, you just couldn't hit on them. But all right, let's wrap up this segment. We're going to come back. We're going to hit a few more questions. Then we're going to get out of here. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out. Thanks, you know, Steve, because I'm bogarting your entire day with this. This was my idea. This was not Steve's idea. We're just going forever on a podcast like we always do. But I'd like to at least, you know, get our money's worth out of it, right? Hey. That's an inside joke. Don't worry about it. But all right, this is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Geller. We're going to come back one more mailbag segment. So get your comments, questions in there, and we'll get to as many as possible. Who dat? We'll be right back. Inside Black and Gold, one more mailbag segment here. And you know, there's a few things that we can talk about. I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. Hammy Whammy says that parade didn't age well. She's talking about the Falcons parade. But you know what other parade didn't age particularly well? Is the Saints parade in Dallas. So I think we're all guilty of a premature parade that in hindsight looks...
I mean, after that performance, though, in Dallas, it definitely deserved a parade. Unfortunately, the parade just didn't make it back to New Orleans.
I mean, at least we got the parade in before we realized the truth. All right. So a few more. Okay, Justin Pasquale says, I want to see more Jordan Mims. He's got juice and some fresh legs till Mullet comes back, though he can play now. Yeah, I'm done with the Jamal Williams experience personally. Like, what has he given you? In like, and I like Jamal Williams.
Yeah.
But you know, like what's the benefit of having him out there? Like if you trust Jordan Mims in pass protection, I think we can live without those like 1.5 yard runs on third and three. Like I don't think those are doing anything for you. He's not a threat in the passing game. He can't return kicks. Like, let's have him inactive. Like I'm done.
He was one of the. I was hoping they could deal him off for a magical 6-round pick somehow, but that didn't happen.
I'd rather see what I have in that guy. And then when Kendre gets back, I'd much rather see what I have in Kendre. And maybe without DA, you can get something out of him. But
or you know, hand it to Taysom.
I agree with that. Yeah, true. and I don't know. I like Jordan Mims. I think he deserves some run, and he's done. Like what? Like again? Like I get being. You know, loyal to your veteran players and whatever. But at a certain point, it's like, what have you done to earn that role? And I just have not, like, other than pass protection, which is important. Don't get me wrong. It's important. But you're a running back, man. Running is in the title. Speaking of running, you'll appreciate this, Steve. Will Hildebrand says, Carr is a Camry. He's good. Gets you where you need to go. That's my word. But he's not great. He will run forever. But you're never going to win a beauty contest. It's going to rust out eventually.
Living proof 2009 Camry right here, baby.
The radio won't work. The air conditioner is busted. Cruise control. No.
Don't say that. That's probably the best thing. The AC is awesome.
AC is your deep ball.
Hallelujah. Right.
No, it's a good. I think that's a Nick Underhill. He likes to do the car references. I've heard him talk about that before. But no, it's true. It's true. It's true. Like, but people want to act like he's, you know, like a Vespa.
Damn.
All right, a few more. Forever A, we're getting really optimistic here. Do you think the Saints can make a run and possibly make the playoffs as a wild card with a 9-8 record? That would require them to go what, 6-1? 6-1 the rest of the way?
Termites.
Playoffs. termites. Okay. We're gonna do this every episode for the remainder of this podcast is termites.
I would love to have pie in the sky dreams, but I just think they're still for as much juice the Riz factor might bring now, it still comes down to talent. And I don't know if they're ready to take on some of the other teams. There are a lot of teams that have, I guess you would say, as the same amount of talent, if not lower in the rest of the schedule. But there are some other teams, like maybe the Rams game will scare me a bit. And obviously a trip to Green Bay stand out.
Yeah, there are some wins on this schedule, right? Like
the Giants.
Giants, Browns, you know, Raiders, you know, like these are games you'll probably be favored in.
Tampa will be tough.
Will they?
I mean, I don't know. Right. I just figured division game. So
they're kind of falling apart. They've been competitive though. So like right. They'll be tough, but at the same time, I'll put my money on the Saints going into Raymond James and beating them there any day of the week. Like they've dominated in that.
Right. Boat. It's not scary to go there for sure.
No, like it's like, I actually feel more confident going there than I do playing them in the dome. look at last year. Like exact same thing happened. Like the Bucs came to New Orleans and dominated, and the Saints went to Raymond James and dominated. But no, I mean, like, I'm not going to say it's not going to happen. Like, let's be real. It's not going to happen. But my belief in sports is that if you don't enjoy something while it's happening, like you're wasting your own opportunity to be excited because
live with it, ride with it.
And again, like if it's going to go bad, it's going to be bad regardless. If you worrying about it being bad now is you suffer twice, right? You suffer the entire time that you're miserable with not actually being hopeful. And then you suffer when it actually happens and you're going to be miserable either way. So you might as well just be like, hey, until it doesn't happen, let's root for it. You know, that's always been my approach to sports. Cause I want to have a good time. Like, that's all I want is to enjoy myself watching football games, watching sporting events. And while it's virtually impossible that this happens, right, that you finish the season 6-1, 7-0, and you even at 9-8, they probably missed the playoffs. But, like, the ride is part of the fun. And if you don't get on the ride until it's almost over, you don't get to enjoy the ride. You get to get off the ride at the end. Maybe you could lie to people and tell them you enjoyed the ride, but you weren't there for the real fun part of the ride, which would be the next 4 weeks where it's kind of this will they, won't they, you know, kind of situation. Like a great dramatic. It's like a great kind of dramatic romance comedy where it's just like, if all you do is skip to the end when they're together, that's not the movie. Like I know they're going to end up together in the end. If all I did was watch the end of The Proposal, I'd be like, well, what's the first half of the movie? That's where the funny parts are. That's where the good stuff is.
All I know is at least the team believes that, again, they can win. I haven't seen The Proposal, so I couldn't comment.
I only brought up The Proposal because it's if you've seen Deadpool and Wolverine.
Still waiting for it to come on Disney Plus, I think, soon.
Like, I can gently tap the fourth wall, too. And it's a Ryan Reynolds movie. But Betty White's in it. Anyway, where was I? We completely lost the plot here. But no, I mean, so, like, at this point, I'm not going to sit here and waste my time being like, oh, it's impossible. What? Like, because we know it's impossible. We know it's not going to happen. But they could go out there and beat the Browns. And I'm going to have a great time during the bye week being like, well, what if it does happen? And then they're going to come back and probably lose to the Rams, and we will lose all hope of that being a thing. But whether that's the case then or it is now, you're going to be mad about it then. So let's wait until then.
Those damn Rams.
That's me preaching. But no, I mean, there's wins on the schedule, right? Like, again, you know, we don't know, like, so much of the NFL is when you play a team. Like, I think the Saints are going to get better over the course of the remainder of this season as they get some of these players back, particularly Eric McCoy. Who knows where the Rams are? Maybe Matt Stafford gets hurt. Maybe something happens that eliminates their strengths, and you'll see how that goes. But yeah, that's my official position on that.
I think they just got Puka back, right?
They did. They got Puka and Cooper back, and they're rolling right now. I think they've won 3 in a row, maybe 4 in a row. Terry Mulliner says, Kubiak babysits a lead. If Rizzi makes him grow a set, he will be on fire. I think, you know, it's a good point. And I think part of the issue is, like, have we really seen scenarios where Kubiak has had a lead to play with typically? Like, the way that game went against the Falcons, to me, is the recipe for the Saints team to win games. And it's just not one that they have had in a lot of games. Like, so yeah, you took a lead late against the Eagles. Like, that wasn't Kubiak babysitting a lead. You were behind. You took a lead late against the Falcons. Again, like, you were behind. So it's not like you had a 10-point lead and you were trying to do that. Now, in this game, I think I am critical of how he handled a 10-point lead, because he was just kind of, I think, playing it safe a little bit too much. And that's how he ended up getting close at the end, in my opinion. But he did get aggressive on that third down play, and you should have got a touchdown if Alvin's hands worked. So I think there's some give and take there. That said, I do think there's some things that we're seeing Clint learn in real time that you kind of, it's hard to evaluate, because there was a holding pattern where you didn't have your starting quarterback and there were so many injuries and you were losing these games before you even stepped on the field, right? Those three games with Spencer Rattler, you never had a chance in those games in hindsight. So you didn't get a chance to learn about Clint as a play caller. This was one of the first times you had a chance to really see how he would handle a game where he had a lead in. And I agree. I think he did try to babysit a little bit, tried to milk it.
Well, you had the first two games were blowouts.
Well, yeah. And that's another example of, like, I don't learn much in those games. I learn what happens when everything works. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of stressful thinking that goes into, oh, what am I going to call up 30 in the fourth quarter? Yeah. 992 RAS says no shirt, no pants, no problem. He's talking about Alvin. Okay. Here's a question. Will Hildebrand again says, how many wins will it take for Rizzi to stay as a permanent head coach? And I'm not going to put the number at anything specific and say if he wins this many games that he will be the head coach.
Right.
But I think we can set a number to say if he doesn't win this many games, then he probably is not going to be in consideration to be a head coach. And I'll put that number at 4. Right. If you can't get this team to be 500 over the second half of your season, particularly knowing that you have games against the Raiders, because that would mean that you lost a game against a team like the Raiders, Giants, even the Browns. And those are not games this team should lose. So that would be the number I put it at. It's like, I don't know how many wins it would take to win the job. But I think even if you go 6-2, 7-1, like, you'd still go through the hiring process. You'd go through the interview process. But if you go like 3-5 the rest of the way, I think that kind of eliminates that discussion a lot.
When we were talking about tough games too, I was just, you know, you're going through stuff. And I just remember too, the Commanders on the schedule. That seemed a lot easier at the start of this year.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
I don't know if there's a number either. It's more of a feeling. I do think there is. You're probably right. You got to get 4, 5. What I wouldn't say an exact number gets him the gig, but definitely the feeling that you have with this team at the end of the year too, with the buy-in. I hate to use that term, but you just have a that like the Raiders. I don't know, they had that high going out last season, and it won their coach the job. So maybe something like that could do the same here. And I wouldn't count Rizzi out to Mick.
No, I agree with you. And you know, it's, I think the buy-in is a factor if you get past that threshold of, oh, we found we had success as, at the same time.
Sure, yeah.
Buy-in is great, but if you're losing seven of your last eight games, I don't care how bought in the team is.
Maybe you know? Depending on how the losses are, too. You can't be getting blown out.
Yeah, right. Like, I need to see not only buy-in, but also good football being played.
Yeah.
And I think you saw both of those things yesterday. In a tough game, you found a way to win it. Great. Step one, down. I think one of the things Rizzi really needed to do to make that a serious conversation is beat the Falcons. And he did that. Because that matchup counts for a lot more than just the one on the standings line, in my opinion. It does for me. I'm sure it does for a lot of fans. So
yeah, plus there's so many factors in it. Obviously, Alvin's day. You didn't want to get swept by the Dirty Birds. His debut. So yeah, a lot of good feels from that.
Justin Pasquale says, I actually enjoy Rizzi interviews and when you talk. I agree. I enjoy listening to him talk. He's a storyteller. It's one of the reasons I like listening to Sean talk, because, you know, he was going to say something. You know, it was always worth listening to, because you were going to end up hearing something that was worth the time. Now, I'm not going to say that about DA, because I'm not going to lie to you. And I think that's, you know, players pick up on that. People pick up on that. It's not exactly a mystery.
Yeah, I guess if we didn't want to hear from DA, apparently the players didn't either.
Again, it's a fine line between being charismatic and corny. And, you know, like stuff like last year, well, maybe it was 2 years ago, I can't remember. They had lost a couple games in a row. They were going down the stretch of the season, and his message was like, how much gas do you have left in the tank? Or something stupid like that. And he had gas cans in everyone's lockers, like red gas cans in their lockers, like a visual aid. And it's like, it's just an example of, like, to me, that's on the wrong side of the, you know, the charisma corny line. And
I think he stole that too from Sean Payton, who I think put a gas can at, was it Roman Harper's locker room, I believe.
It's not even original either, right?
Like, right.
And the funniest thing about that, though,
Bordelie just put up there, keep chopping wood. That's my whole impression from Dennis. I'm chopping. Yeah.
The funniest thing that happened, though, is after he did that, like, a lot of the players were like, I don't need a portable, I don't need a gas canister, right? Like, what am I going to do with this? Like,
put it in my trunk.
Even if I ran out of gas, I would call someone. But so Landon Young, who's just a country motherfucker, you know, he goes around, he collects like six of them. So, we're in the locker room. He's walking out. He's got like three under each arm. Because he's like, I can't get enough of these. I need them. I would imagine Connor McGovern would be the same way, another farm child. But yeah, it's just a good example of like, okay, if I'm bought in and I'm like on like a listening and like I believe what you're saying and I'm bought in, then that's like maybe that can be motivating. When I'm not bought in, I'm just like, dude, this is corny, man. Like, and yeah, I haven't been bought in for a while.
You wanted to be, but yeah, it was hard.
I tried as hard as I could. I spent a month out in California trying to get bought in. And the second we came back, it was like, I'm like, all right.
I was bought in after 2 weeks. I was ready to go as Clint Kubiak for Halloween.
What would your Clint Kubiak costume have been?
It would just been a headset and like a tablet or whatever to try and just look like a coach, and people would have been like, who are you? And I've been like, Clint Kubiak, offensive genius, of course. I don't think he has like a distinguishable look about him, though, that I could really pinpoint.
Future head coach Clint Kubiak coming at you. You'd have to kind of mumble under your breath and talk about playing golf with your dad. You have to talk in like a monotone, like, anyway, okay. Keep chopping wood, Bordelie. All right, that's all I got. Anything else you want to mention after an hour 52 of podcasting to get before we kick all these guys out of my house?
Obviously, the Falcons game, you look forward to those matchups against them. It's always heightens the senses of everyone. And I just think this one is interesting for me just because I can't wait to have Winston back in the dome. I am not one of the folks on the Winston should have stuck around bandwagon. He would have been a great backup. Not a fan. So looking forward to the Saints defense taking it to him and getting some of those God's plan interceptions off of him.
Yeah. There's certain things throughout a season where it's like, okay, your goals are to win as many games as possible and make the playoffs. And whether those happen or not, you're going to have secondary goals. One is like, I'm not getting swept by the Falcons.
Right.
I'm not losing to the Cowboys. I'm not letting Jameis Winston walk back into this building and beat the bricks off me.
And give me some stupid speech that's going to be everywhere after the game.
I'm not letting him eat W's in my house.
Right.
I'm not letting Sean Payton walk back in here and do what he did, but he did that. Like, that's to me, that was like, when did DA actually get fired? This is the last thing I'll say. When did DA actually get fired in the sense that this was happening regardless whether it went well for a couple weeks or not? The die had been cast. It was week 7 against the Broncos when Sean Payton came in here and dog walked his former team. That was the week that Dennis Allen really got fired. And he survived a couple weeks after that, in my opinion, because they didn't want to give Sean Payton the satisfaction of knowing he got the coach fired. But that was the tipping point. And that's why, like, those secondary goals, like those first goals, you want them to happen. You're really invested in them happening. But if they don't, you're like, we'll live. We'll survive this. That those secondary goals are the ones that you have.
That's it. It pushes you over the edge, right?
We can't get swept by the Falcons. We can't let Sean Payton do what he did to us happen to us.
Well, cross that off.
Yeah. And those are the things that you're gone. He gone. Anyway.
Strike 3.
Strike 12. How many games? Strike 30, 41. I think that's how many games DA coached.
Good luck to you as DC wherever you are, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, good luck with those Super Bowl rings. You're inevitably going to win with a much, more Super Bowl-ready team. But anyway, we're going to call it off there. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out. It's been a long episode. We're going to come back later in the week with our traditional kind of Wednesday injury report. And this week, I do want to get back into an actual game preview pod because I genuinely don't know much about the Browns other than Jameis. And they had Amari Cooper. They don't have him anymore. So I part of it's for me. Like I need to research. I need someone to come in here and tell me all the answers to my questions.
Right. It kind of gets us geared up for First Take on Sunday.
Exactly. No, it's valuable. Like I get just as much out of it as the people listening, I imagine. But we'll try to get back to that on Thursday or Friday. Either way, thanks everyone for listening. This has been a frustrating season. Hopefully, we get to celebrate a few more wins before all is said and done. But until then, who dat? Thanks everyone. Subscribe, rate, review wherever you get your podcasts. Until the next time.
Bring on the Browns.
Peace.